everybody, and welcome back to the Diamond Duo Podcast. It's been a minute. Welcome into episode 82 of the Diamond Duo Podcast. I'm Tony Puglisi, joined as always by my co-host and co-producer Tom Bauer, here to bring you the latest of the MLB offseason, every move, trade, signing, everything in between. This episode, this long-awaited 2024 debut episode of the Diamond Duo Podcast, is brought to you by the most delicate and great of sponsors, Serial Killers. We don't endorse them, we don't plan on becoming one, but I'm on Discord right now and I'm noticing an uncanny resemblance. At least Twitter told me so. You don't get that, but you will in a minute. Please don't call the FBI on us. That was a joke. FBI, if you're listening to this humble podcast, we're really joking about that. We'll explain that in a minute. But Tom, god damn it has been a minute. You know... I'm not even going to have to start with that. You're already shaking your head in disbelief.
Yeah, cut past all the f***ing pleasantries and all that bullshit. You just threw it out the window and reignited a spark into a conversation I wish had died probably about 3 weeks ago. I don't know what's more damning about that, though. Thinking that bringing up the serial killer thing again, or actually thinking that we have a sponsor for this show, because we sure as hell don't.
And I love the sponsor is just the general concept of serial killers. They are giving us money to talk about baseball. Also, timeout. Can we rewind a little bit? Topic you thought would die 3 weeks ago? First of all, serial killer thing. That'll make sense in a minute, but you thought I wouldn't bring this up on the show? Like, I had, like, little intrusive thoughts saying, that may be a little mean, you know, he's your friend, but come on. All's fair in the Diamond Duo Podcast. Nothing is safe. Nothing is sacred. And that includes Twitter polls that may or may not be hilarious, but don't know if it's bad taste or not. I'll leave you to disclose more, Mr. Talmer.
Yeah, thanks. I knew you would bring this up because the morning of this whole conversation going down on the good old radio dial, you were texting me back stuff that I had already seen earlier that morning, as you're just kind of getting the recaps of all that stuff and be like, what the hell is going on, Tom? And then other people chimed in, and yeah, it's a whole thing now. So, if you don't know, about 3 weeks ago, I work in radio professionally. I work at a station in New York, 98.7 ESPN New York, and I was filling in on their morning show, DPHO, in Rothenburg. Love those guys. They can be a little out there, let's say, but I have a deep appreciation for them. They're great guys. I proceed to compliment them by then saying that one of the gracious co-hosts of the show, Dave Rothenberg, in the middle of the show that I'm filling in on one day, he tells me to stand up and he says, Tom, you look like somebody. And I'm thinking, okay, this could go a few different ways in my head. I'm playing different scenarios like, okay, maybe he looks like this person or that person that we work with maybe, or somebody like a celebrity or something like that. No. Dave goes, yeah, you have a striking resemblance to Jeffrey Dahmer. And then history was made. And then a whole conversation continued. Rick DiPietro told me I combed my hair with a pork chop. And then the next day, we had to put out a Twitter poll to confirm whether or not I looked like a serial killer. Specifically, Jeffrey Dahmer. And this poll got over 1,000 votes. Which 59% said yes, I do. So now I hate 59% of X users out there. I was done with the internet after that for the day. I will say, the people, though, who did chime in on that and had comments and whatnot, not necessarily the people who are comparing me to other serial killers, because that just strikes up a whole different conversation. But some of the creativity, I will say, of the listeners and fans of the show was fantastic with the quick Photoshop work that they were able to do. I will give them credit for that. But that's the context of the situation, is that I was told I look like a serial killer, and now Tony's bringing it up again to haunt my memories.
I don't even know where to start. I want to make fun of all of that. So, can I just walk it back a little bit? He told you to stand up, said you look like someone,
Yes.
And then allowed you the freedom of mind to be like, oh man, maybe it's like, I don't know, I'm just gonna spitball some guys, I don't know, Neil Patrick Harris, or I'm literally just thinking of blonde guys, or like this person, that person, someone who's typically deemed in a good light.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just smacks you in the face with Jeffrey Dahmer. No warning.
Yeah, no warning. Nothing at all. Nothing that we had talked about. Just out of the blue, this insane man, Dave. If you don't know anything about Dave, he can be a little bit out there and insane, let's say. I've gone on record and I have said that. And this just fits the bill, I think. I love Dave, but oh my god. Yeah, that was out of left field completely.
When I first saw that, or when you first told me that, I figured, like, oh, there has to have been, like, a running joke beforehand, or you were talking about, like, the Netflix series, or someone else joked about it. The fact that he thought in the moment, on the radio, yeah, let me just call this dude Jeffrey Dahmer, that's hysterical to me. And moreover, the fact that they put a f***ing poll out for it, which, first of all, to the guy in that comment section that said, no, I see more John Wayne Gacy.
That was f***ed up. I'm not gonna lie. That was messed up.
A killer clown. Not only is he calling you fat, he's calling you a clown. That one set me back. Like, the whole thing is, like, funny, but in a screwed up kind of way. I think that's the comment that snapped me back to reality. Like, okay, this is really f***ed up. There's something off about this. And then, oh my god, I'm sorry, I have so many thoughts on this at once. I'm trying to put myself in your shoes now, because I remember I was at work when I saw this. I had just, like, sent out all my morning reports. I just did everything I needed to do. So I opened Twitter just to get rid of the notification. Dude, that was at the top of my page, and I thought I read it wrong. I needed to read it again. And now I'm, like, putting myself in your shoes, having all this crap transpire the day before in that morning, and then you getting the tweet from me. Oh my god, I completely understand getting off the internet after that, but that, oh my god, that may have been one of the funniest tweets I opened, like, my day to in a while.
Oh god. Yeah, if I had actually prepped for this ahead of time, I would have actually had the audio ready from that day, where we just bring it up out of the blue, but you'll have to take my word for it. I can point you in the direction of it if you want to. Look up the December 13th podcast, Hour 2 NBA Ejections in Stump Rothenberg, and you will hear the origins of this story, and then you can listen to the best of and whatnot of the corresponding day, or listen to the hours of whatnot December 14th, and you'll get the full picture of the story. Go check it out, DiPietro and Rothenberg, wherever you get your podcasts. Also, tune into them on the 98.7 ESPN New York app, because we've got amazing content there. But now I'm just plugging the radio station that I work for in my professional life.
The radio station that comped you to a serial killer, no big deal.
Yeah, no biggie.
Free clicks and all that.
Yeah, exactly. Go give them the free clicks.
Now, if I refer to my co-host here, ladies and gentlemen listening, as Jeffrey Dahmer at any point in the podcast, now you know why.
I'm glad we've had this 10-minute long conversation about this. I'm so happy.
I'm kind of upset I don't have the outro now. If anything, next time. It'll definitely be relevant next time, right? I've been Tony Puglisi. That's been Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah, Happy New Year, by the way, everybody. I don't think we've said that in the first 10 minutes of this whole thing.
Happy 2024. Good to talk to you guys again.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit late to say Happy New Year because we've been on such a hiatus. Sorry about that, by the way. It was unannounced. We had planned to actually record before Christmas or the week of or something like that. But plans just happened, holidays happened, I needed to take a vacation because Juan Soto was traded to the New York Yankees literally the night I posted the episode after re-recording a section of audio about Juan Soto. I'm literally posting the godforsaken episode and the trade is announced. I literally had recorded 45 minutes earlier a recap of what to expect going forward, and that completely got you out the window. And to add insult to injury, Eduardo Rodriguez signed with the Diamondbacks immediately afterwards. So it was a whole messed up situation.
I remember that night because I had just finished editing and I had just finished having an aneurysm watching the New York Islanders blow a lead to the worst team in hockey. I remember that night very well. I think each of us, Tom, had a moment of awakening, distress, despair. That's it, a moment of despair that night. Mm-hmm. But no, like Tom said, you know, kind of an unplanned hiatus, but holidays happened. I actually got sick to start the year, and my voice sounded like hot garbage, so wouldn't have been able to record earlier anyway. But we're back. Very happy to be back.
We're back! It's January 8th of 2024. We're recording a little before 10:30 at night. So, of course, anything that happens after this moment in time will not be discussed unless it's big enough that we have to jump in. Hopefully, that's not the case. Go follow us on social media at, what are we? At The Diamond Duo Podcast on Instagram, at Diamond Duo Pod on X, Twitter. I had to think about it for a second because I haven't had to say those handles in like over a month. I probably also haven't checked the accounts in over a month, so that goes to tell you how much dedication I have to the whole social media game. Also, give us a follow or sub on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We would truly appreciate it. And something you should know about this episode in particular, or at least this recording, is that we're actually going to break it up into two parts for you. So part one, we're going to recap all the major stories, trades, what have you, that transpired over the past 3 weeks to a month, whenever the last time we recorded was, until this very moment, because there is a lot of major stories to talk about. Also, we want to get out our 2024 New Year's resolutions for MLB teams. It is our top rated episode, our most listened to episode of all time of the Diamond Duo Podcast. We are bringing that back again. However, you're going to have to wait because we're going to release that as a kind of part two to this episode, but in reality, it's going to be its own separate episode, episode 83 of the Diamond Duo Podcast, which we will possibly record tonight. We'll see how tired we get after the major headlines discussion. We will go from there, but expect another episode out in the very, very near future, if not the same week, as this episode releases, episode 82 of the Diamond Duo Podcast.
Switching it up a little bit for the new year, feel like it's going to make for a better listening experience on the whole because, hey, trust me, we can admit when we're wrong, and two-hour episodes may be a bit much for some folks to listen to sometimes, even though we're very proud of the content. Figure bite-sized pieces may be a little better for how much trade and free agent signing material we got to catch up on. Hope you guys enjoy and appreciate that. And that being said, Tom, I think we're just about set. I think that's every single disclaimer out of the way. We caught up, social handles, compared you to Jeffrey Dahmer, the whole works. Everything we need to start an episode.
Yeah, I think we've hit our quota. I think we can actually get started with all the baseball content. We've got a lot to talk about, as we've said about 10 times already. So let's just get right into it, Tony.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and start with the biggest signing of them all. Frankie Montas to the Reds. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, shut the hell up. Shut the hell up.
I had to pull one out of a hat, and that was the first one that came to mind. Hey, that's good for the Yankees, because now we know that Brian Cashman only overpaid for that man in prospects, not in money. That's a win in my book. Let's get to the actual biggest story, and that story is the Dodgers. You thought I was going to say Shohei Ohtani, which is technically right. But I feel like, Tom, the appropriate way to approach this is the Dodgers happened this offseason. Like Tom said, right after he posted that episode, Juan Soto signed, and then Eduardo Rodriguez signed, and I feel like there was kind of this palpable tension, like, oh, Shohei hasn't signed yet, Yoshinobu Yamamoto is still a free agent, and there's still, on the whole, a bunch of, you know, trade pieces that could get shuffled. Maybe this is the start of, you know, all the teams across Major League Baseball trying to get their guy. The Yankees did. Let's see who's next. Oh, next is the Dodgers. Oh, cool. Next after that is the Dodgers. Oh, cool. Next after that, too, is also the goddamn Dodgers. These guys took a thrashing in the NLDS, and they took it personally because, mother God, let's just go one step at a time, Tom, and let's talk about the big fish first. Shohei Ohtani. This man may have just signed the most iconic free agent signing in sports history. I'm going to echo what you said, Tom, and I really do believe that because, mother of God, 10 years, $700 million.
Insanity.
That does not sound real. It has been weeks. It has been a month since that's happened, and I still don't believe it, Tom. Just that amount of money going to one person, that person carrying a heap of cultural significance with the Japanese market and Asian markets in general, and that player also going to indisputably the winningest regular season team of the past couple years or so. This is a signing that will be remembered for a long, long time. So, like, God, man, where do we even start? How do we even break down this contract? Because there's a lot we could talk about.
I think we gotta go the finances first, dude. Like, I mean, first of all, we were all speculating, is it going to be over $500 million? Is he the first $500 million man? We were all talking about that for like the past 2 years. And then we kind of got the feeling that, yeah, he is going to be the $500 million man. But how much more, really? Because his pitching arm could be going to shit because he's had arm issues in the past. He can still hit like unworldly. And of course, he could always move to the bullpen. So we're like, okay, well, whatever. The finance, like, Shohei to the Dodgers, no surprise. We both predicted that. I think anybody saw this coming. And if anybody thought otherwise, they're out of their mind. When we saw Jeff Passan say $700 million, I think our collective jaws dropped beyond the floor, beyond the 50 feet of crap that is the Oakland Athletics. And it just kept sinking and sinking and sinking into the hole of deferment that the Dodgers are going to be digging themselves into over the next like 25 years, because that's pretty much how long it's going to be paid out over. Actually, maybe not 25 years, maybe 20 years. I suck at math. But the point is $700 million. Absolute insanity. $70 million a year initially. We'll get to what transpired in the next 24 hours in a minute, but we would like to point out, because this is the most important stat, he's now worth more than several island nations put together and multiple other sports franchises too. And you might be saying, Tom, Tony, you're out of your mind. Of course he's not. And I say, bullshit, he is. I have the GDP pulled up of the countries all around the world that are recognized, and his contract alone is worth more than 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 countries' total GDP. If you're wondering what countries those are, you've got Tuvalu, which has a GDP of $60 million, Kiribati of $223 million, so we're not even talking about half the deal yet. You got the Marshall Islands at 280, Micronesia at 427, San Tome and Principe at 547. I definitely butchered that. And then you've got Dominica at $612 million. The point is, this contract is absolute insanity. And yeah, it is worth more than the GDP of other countries. And as Tony put, other sports franchises. You might be thinking, that's ridiculous too. Sports teams are valued at so much money. Introducing the Arizona Coyotes! Or probably like five other NHL teams that suck too. Possibly like the Columbus Blue Jackets. I could go on and on, but I'm not the hockey expert in this podcast. That is Tony Puglisi. Also, this is a baseball podcast. I'm choosing to move on. What happened over the next 24 hours, Tony, I think is the craziest part of this whole Shohei Ohtani deal. And that's the deferments in his deal. I'll let you explain exactly how they work.
So the deferments on this contract, I'm going to be honest, maybe the most ludicrous thing about it, even more so than the initial price tag. Because $700 million is a crazy amount of money, and so many people initially were saying how much of an overpayment it was. And you know what? For a full-time DH in his first year? Maybe. But that's before you take into account jersey sales, and marketing, and the seats that's gonna get to the stadium. There's so many other factors in it. This is not a money tree that's going to be developed over time. They're already seeing profits from this. Now, when you hear deferment with baseball, 9 times out of 10, you're gonna think of, one of two players, Bobby Bonilla or Chris Davis. Yeah, Shohei Ohtani said, hold my beer, and is casually deferring, not one, not two, not 3 million, not 4 million, not 5 million, but 68 million of his annual 70, and it's going to be paid to him beginning in 2034, a decade from now. Literally, the end of the contract is when he will see the majority of the money. I know a lot of people are going to ask immediately, oh my God, why would he do that? I'm going to give you two reasons why he did that. Most likely, I don't have, you know, written evidence, but I imagine this is why he did it. Number one, Shohei Ohtani is the most endorsed athlete in Major League Baseball, and that's not even, it's not even close. That's because Shohei Ohtani is not only advertised here in America, imagine how many sponsorship deals he's gotten over in Japan. That's number one, so he's not really losing out on a ton of money, and he'll be set for life by the time he's done getting paid. It'll be, what is it, 2050? 2043. Reason number two is competitiveness. Shohei does not want to go to the Dodgers, eat $70 million a year, and then financially handicap them so they can't pay for luxuries like a starting rotation, a bullpen, depth hitting, you know, things that have killed them before in the postseason. One of the biggest pitches that the Dodgers gave to Shohei was that they want to win, and that relatively, the previous couple years have been not ideal. So they want to get better. They want to be a dynasty. They want to be remembered for winning World Series, not for winning regular season trophies. I imagine that is what swayed him to suggest this. That's important too. He suggested this deferment strategy. Honestly, I think it's a really good deal for Shohei, and goes without saying, a really good deal for the Dodgers, because now, guess what? You're paying $2 million a year for Shohei Ohtani. In the now. Obviously not in late, not later. But imagine that, Tom. Imagine if I told you in, like, August that the team that ended up signing Shohei Ohtani would give him an AAV of $2 million a year. Either way, that's the deferments. Will it end up being Bobby Bonilla 2.0? Probably, but the Dodgers have the wherewithal and the financial flexibility, excuse me, to get it done. And moreover, every argument of Bobby Bonilla is going to be shut down if they win a ring. That should be much easier now that they have Shohei, and the pieces we'll get to later.
I think they might have to win at least two rings to supplement a $700 million contract, and you paying $68 million annually over the course of like 9 or 10 seasons. I think it kind of does, especially with the talent you're assembling. I mean, we'll get to the other trades and acquisitions, but I've always been a proponent of what Tony just said. A ring solves all your problems. It wipes away the infamy that is brought upon your franchise for the better or worse. Like, remember how bad David Price was in Boston? No one really does anymore because he won a ring with the Red Sox in 2018. So no one really thinks about that anymore.
2019 Nationals.
Even the 2013 Red Sox, they had just, like, gotten into terrible problems. They had the Jonathan Papelbon incidents and all that, like the team eating fried chicken with, like, John Lester or something like that in the clubhouse 2 seasons before. They won a World Series and all that stuff went away. Rings solve problems, but I think you might need more than one to satiate this sort of deal. Now, that being said, the last thing I'll say about the deferments is you might be wondering if this is legal. And according to Jeff Passan and according to the CBA, it very much is legal. I believe this is Article 21, if I know my Roman numerals enough, or 16, something like that, I don't know. It's about deferred compensation. And from the CBA directly, it says, quote, "There shall be no limitations on either the amount of deferred compensation or the percentage of total compensation attributable.
Sound it out. Attribution? Is that what you're trying to say?
Attributable. That's the word. I'm sorry.
Come on.
I don't even know why that was so difficult to pronounce. I'm sorry.
And you called me a dumbass.
Shut up. To deferred compensation for which a uniform player's contract may provide. So behind all the fluff and the tough language to pronounce, that essentially means there is no way Major League Baseball can step in because of the CBA negotiated between the owners, the players, and the league. So this is fully within Major League Baseball's rules. Is it BS? Kinda. But they played the system. They played it well, and Shohei was selfless enough to want this type of deal. Like Tony said, he's getting probably like $50 million in endorsements, I think it is, off the field alone. Trust me, I think he can live on a $2 million salary by the Dodgers. Let's move in past the contract stuff and I guess talk about the buildup, because that's what's next on the rundown. Despite all of his best efforts, unfortunately, Dave Roberts did not ruin the chances of landing superstar Shohei Ohtani. I forgot about this. In Shohei's press conference, I guess this is retribution for all the Dave Roberts BS, because the Dodgers essentially told Shohei Ohtani the past 10 years have been a failure. That's a shot at Dave Roberts. He shouldn't be their manager, but whatever. Also, in this pursuit, I guess Toronto was, I don't know what place they came in the Shohei Ohtani sweepstakes, but it sure as wasn't first and eat Toronto, because John Morosi, oh dear God in heaven, did he have a terrible, terrible John Heyman moment. This arguably is worse than John Heyman, because this kept reporting on Shohei going to Toronto, saying the plane was landing in Toronto or something like that, that he was meeting with the Toronto Blue Jays, expect them to sign and whatnot, and oh boy, not good. He never went to Toronto to begin with. It was another billionaire's plane flying from LA to Toronto. How about them Blue Jays?
I'm sorry, I don't know what I'm laughing more at now. The fact that if you were on Twitter that day, when Morosi put out, like, oh my god, Shohei's landing in Toronto soon, people were putting out the flight number, the scheduled time of landing, like, where, like, the airports that the airplane was traveling between. We knew everything about this plane. You had to be there to see the utter chaos and insanity that transpired when he tweeted that out. He walked it back, obviously, because he was, you know, blatantly wrong. And then moreover, I don't know what I'm laughing more at, that or the fact that the Blue Jays have made maybe like three moves this offseason. And one of them was for Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. And this feels like the biggest kick to the groin that they could have been given. Like, not just the fact that, oh, Shohei's not signing there. It wasn't even a chance. He wasn't going there. He barely ever talked with them. It was basically open and shut. He was going to go to the Dodgers. Just to circle back to the Dave Roberts thing really quick. As much as I did side, and obviously this is all, you know, smoke and mirrors in retrospect. The whole, like, oh, in case you didn't remember, Shohei made it clear to every team he spoke with to not make it clear that he spoke with them because he wanted to, you know, I guess just keep it on the down low. Respect his privacy. The guy just wants to be able to talk to teams without the media prodding him for it every minute second of it. No one realistically thought that, oh, a team randomly said that they spoke with Ohtani. I guess they're out of the running. No one ever really thought that. And especially with the Dodgers. This is the Dodgers we're talking about that gave him $700 million. Some of it may have been apology money for Dave Roberts spilling the beans, but moreover, Tom, do you remember how, like, that day, like, in addition to the whole Shohei plane thing, just the whole, like, oh my god, Dave Roberts just cost the Dodgers Ohtani. Like, I don't think anybody ever thought that, but just the thought of, like, oh my god, if that happened and he goes literally anywhere else, I'd be surprised if Dave Roberts was ever seen alive again, let alone in a Dodgers uniform.
Oh boy. Yeah, that would have been true. I mean, I'm not an endorser of violence. Looks can be deceiving, I know. If you heard the intro alone, you might think that, but...
Are you sure about that?
You know what? I'm declining to answer. So, yeah, that would have happened. But, yeah, that would have been something. That would have been his lasting legacy as the Dodgers manager. Not that they won a World Series title and broke the drought with a Mickey Mouse ring. No. That he let Shohei Ohtani go to another team. So sad.
If this team, like, I know we're jumping the gun a little bit here, but this is still about Dave Roberts. If this team does not bare minimum win one World Series, bare minimum, we haven't even gotten to the other moves yet. If they don't win one World Series, Dave Roberts needs to be under, like, FBI investigation for, like, actively tampering against the Dodgers. Like, if they don't win a World Series within the next 2 years, Roberts needs to be gone. Frankly, I'm of the proponent that if they don't even make it to the World Series this year, you need to get rid of Roberts. I know it's, like, it ruins, like, clubhouse chemistry and all that. He's been there for so long. But at this rate, it's all or nothing. Do you want to win a f***ing World Series? Or do you want Dave Roberts to botch bullpen decisions in critical NLCS games for the fifth year in a row? All I wanted to throw, that's the last thing I wanted to say about Dave Roberts.
I was just going to say, let alone win the World Series, they need to make the World Series first. They haven't even gotten there since 2020. And think about it. We haven't even mentioned Mookie Betts or Freddie Freeman once. We haven't mentioned Walker Buehler once. Max Muncy. Will Smith. Any of their other stars. Their lack of pitching. Well, maybe not as much anymore now, but they need to make the World Series first. But yes, they still have to win within, I'd say, the next 3 or 4 years. However much longer you got Freddie Freeman under contract, at least, bare minimum, you have to make, I'd say, one, if not two World Series, and you better at least win one of them. For the sake of baseball, I hope they don't, because it would be the ultimate joke. But the truth is, they are going to be a heavy favorite, especially in the NL West, because let's be real, who's going to be their main competition there now in terms of talent in the regular season success? Postseason success, that's a whole different ballgame. The Dodgers need to get over themselves and actually not choke when it matters most, but that's a superstar problem, not necessarily a Dave Roberts problem. But either way, yeah, Dave Roberts, if you're not, I'd probably give him 2 years in the Shohei regime. I know you want one and done, but if they can't even make the World Series or sniff it in the next 2 years, He's got to be gone. And we haven't even talked about the other Dodgers moves, Tony. I guess let's get right into that, because that's going to lead to this case even more so.
If you thought them getting Shohei Ohtani was enough to just fully push the World Series button, like, all right, you better win now, you ain't seen nothing yet. Oh, and also, just before we do that, the Shohei move put them over the 40-man roster, so for the crunch, they had to make a trade. They traded with the Yankees. They got Trey Sweeney in exchange for left-handed reliever Victor Gonzalez and infielder Yorbit Vivas. With that trade made, you'd figure the Dodgers maybe were done by now, right? Yeah, no. They went to the San Diego Padres well of, hey, the Tampa Bay Rays have this young pitcher they're not gonna come anywhere close to paying in a few years. Let's just, go out and get him for next to nothing. How about that? Well, not next to nothing, but the Dodgers swooped Tyler Glasnow and Manuel Margot out of the Rays system in exchange for Ryan Pepiot, and future Puglisi's Paisan by the looks of it, Johnny DeLuca. So yeah, the Dodgers just casually did that. They traded one of their bright young pitchers to do that. Ryan Pepiot looked good to end last year, too. I don't know, Tom, if you saw some of his numbers. And Tyler Glasnow comes with some red flags. Let's just say that. I don't need to be the first one to tell you that Tyler Glasnow has frequented a visit from the injury bug. And trust me, when guys are injury prone, I don't want that to be like the thing that defines their legacy. But for Tyler Glasnow, his innings pitched since 2019 have gone 60, 57, 88, 6, 120. His career high in innings pitched is also 120. I'm not going to be the one that discounts his talent. Tyler Glasnow, when he's hot, can be one of the best pitchers in baseball. I truly believe that. His fastball-curveball combo, one of the best I think I've ever seen. His curveball is devastating. His fastball could touch the upper 90s if he could still get it there. I actually didn't get a chance to watch him a ton last year. But judging by his results, you know, 118 ERA plus looks solid. Just not exactly something you would consider, like, let's just say this, Tom. He used to be a highly touted, like, frontline starter potential. He was the big piece acquired in that Chris Archer trade from the Pirates. The Rays are going to make him into an ace. He's going to be their guy forever. And then he just kind of kept getting hurt. I kind of feel like that time has passed, Tom. Maybe if he stays healthy, he could still hit that. I'm not just going to go outright and say, oh, his career's over. He could still, bare minimum, be a middle rotation guy should he stay healthy and on the field. But that's the big question mark. And it's a question mark all too common in the Dodgers pitching room is, can he stay on the field?
Well, here's the problem. Tyler Glasnow, not only does he have a rich injury history, not only does he come with a warning sign that says, warning, fragile, will shatter if you drop. He's 30 years old. He's going to be 31 in August. And they just gave him this 5-year, $135 million extension on top of everything. Like, they didn't even need to do that. They could have just waited and seen what they can get out of Tyler Glasnow. Now, granted, maybe they would have paid more money in free agency, but I have my doubts. This is fun money to the Dodgers. No doubt. And I agree with you completely. If he is healthy, he can be one of the most effective pitchers in baseball. But I think he's lost some of that spark, or maybe we just haven't seen that much of it to really begin with, to give Tyler Glasnow a true outlook, a true vision of what his career really is. He's a career 3.89 ERA pitcher with a 107 ERA plus. That's fine. That's average. That's not 5 years, $135 million worthy. That's a little bit concerning. He might have only had 7.1 WAR over the course of 8 years across Major League Baseball. It's just, there's a lot of concern here, and the Dodgers are already fragile as is. If you drop one guy in their rotation, they're going to start falling off like flies. That's what happened last year. They have so many question marks. They have so many innings they need to eat, because they're not going to have certain guys going forward. The rotation is still bleak. I'm even discounting Shohei Ohtani, who's not probably even going to be able to pitch this year, possibly. Yeah, you got Yoshinobu Yamamoto, which we'll be talking about in a couple minutes here, but this isn't going to solve your problems. They need more supplementary arms if you're going to get a player like Tyler Glasnow. And again, I would not have signed that extension, whether it's fun money or not. I'm just not that big of a fan of this deal for the Dodgers. Like, it has a lot of benefit. And of course, to get Manuel Margot in this deal, you can slot him and as a starting outfielder, even a fourth outfielder if you really need him. He's a really solid one at that. But if we're taking a look at the outlook, I mean, yeah, the Dodgers will probably win the trade in the end, but how much are they really going to get out of Tyler Glass now? That's the real big issue I have here.
Here's my big issue. Let's just say everything goes great. Everything goes really well. He largely stays on the field, throws at least like 100-some-odd innings. He at least eclipses triple digits for the third time in his career. That's wild. And when he pitches, he's effective. What happens when you get to the playoffs? And and he has to display his 5.72 postseason ERA for the world to see.
Oof.
If you go back to the World Series, where he threw in two games for the Tampa Bay Rays, he coughed up, by the way, to the Dodgers, 10 runs. All of them earned, good for a 9.64 ERA. I get a two-game sample size is not the be-all and all, and even then his postseason career isn't, you know, it's not Andy Pettit long. I don't know, for 10 games in the postseason, for pitchers with at least 10 starts in the postseason, that ranks among the very worst. Paired with, guess who? Clayton Kershaw. So, let's just say you get to the playoffs. How are you gonna de-choke the chokers? Because the Dodgers themselves are an organization, they've proved this to us time and time again, cannot get it done in October. I'm a little worried they're getting a guy here who, again, is all hype and no production, or at least minimal production to what they're paying him. And moreover, crumbles like a paper when you put him in high leverage situations, particularly in the postseason. Like, that's where my fear of this comes in, because as much as I want to like Tyler Glasnow and want to see him fulfill his true potential, which if there's a team he could do that with, it's the Dodgers. They reform and reshape pitchers all the time. That Ryan Pepiot kid we were talking about that got traded to the Rays, 2.14 ERA in minimal starts this year. He's going to be a stud for the Rays. And the Dodgers worked miracles with him, with the rest of their pitching staff, injured throughout most of last year, injured or suspended. Glasnow, I hate to sound samey, but I'm really cautious about this deal. I don't want to just outright say it's a failure because he hasn't pitched for them yet, but it just seems really, really presumptuous, like they're spending money for the sake of spending it. The trade itself I don't think is terrible, but the extension I really worry is going to age badly.
The good news is they'll either be able to eat the money if they have to release him, or they can trade him, or they can possibly turn him into a reliever, because there's multiple options they can do with Tyler Glasnow because his stuff is that effective. Will it be that case in 5 years' time? I really don't know. I guess we're just going to have to wait and see with Tyler Glasnow. Speaking of waiting and seeing, there's a certain pitcher that the Dodgers signed in free agency. You may or may not know him. His name is Yoshinobu Yamamoto. He's yet to throw a pitch in Major League Baseball, yet he got the richest contract for a free agent pitcher in Major League Baseball history, surpassing Gerrit Cole by $1 million. And this may have been a case of it was going to be the Dodgers all along, too. I really thought New York had a chance to be a wild card in this one. We knew the Giants were falling out of that quickly. Boston, I think, could have been an option. I think I may have projected Yamamoto to go to the Cubs, but I don't think there was really any traction there. Then there were reports that New York prices were going to be close to this, but not really eclipsing that, at least in the case of the Yankees, because for whatever stupid reason, they didn't want to pay a guy more than Gerrit Cole. Which is, one, beyond ridiculous, because markets change. But two, I can almost see where they're coming from this. Because Yoshinobu Yamamoto, don't get me wrong, we've been hyping him up for months. He's an amazing talent coming out from Japan. His numbers there are absolutely insane. And it looks like his stuff will translate extremely well to Major League Baseball. If you've seen Kodai Senga last year, you could think that. But honestly, he might be better than that. And that'll be pretty damn good. He can become the Dodgers ace really quickly. In fact, he's getting paid like one. The issue is, as I mentioned, he has yet to throw a pitch in Major League Baseball. And the Dodgers gave him this type of deal. And not only that, but they had to pay his posting fee too. So I think the deal is going to end up being like $375 million. Because I think the posting fee was at least $50 million back to his team in the NPB. A huge, huge risk for Yoshinobu Yamamoto. I don't think he has an injury history in Japan. We'll see how he translates. The success should work out well. I mean, he's going into the NL West. There's not really too much offensive firepower, I really think, in the entire division, so he'll have that for a couple of games. But still, Tony, I mean, he was the most coveted pitcher of free agency, don't get me wrong. But even if he signed with a New York team, even if he signed with the Yankees, I'd be ecstatic, but I'd still be questioning whether or not you can pay over $300 million for a guy who's yet to throw a pitch in Major League Baseball. He's a huge, huge question mark. A very young question mark, a very attractive question mark, but still a huge question mark.
You see, in a way, I do agree with you, in a sense, that yes, he's a question mark. Any single Japanese pitcher that comes over to the States and throws in Major League Baseball is a question mark to some extent. I'm actually going to err on the side of optimism this time. I wasn't this way for the past couple signings. Like, honestly, when Ha-Seong Kim came over, like, I know, completely different leagues, the Korean League versus the Japanese League, but in terms of Asian players coming over recently, I've largely been hesitant. Ha-Seong Kim, I didn't think would translate. I didn't think his power would translate. And last year, he did kind of prove me wrong. So I'm happy about that. But Tom, the big one I was right about. Do you remember what was his name on the Reds? Shogo Akiyama. Does that sound familiar to you?
Shoto Akiyama, something like that. Yeah.
He was, if you guys don't remember, he was a contact-driven outfield type. He was actually a Gold Glove finalist one year. So his glove did translate really well. But his bat most certainly did not. Like, contact-driven hitters from Japan, you know, they don't all turn into Ichiro Suzuki, let's say that. I know this kind of sounds like a tangent that I'm going on, but there is a point I'm getting to. The common link between all these Japanese players, particularly the hitters, is that they haven't seen MLB competition. Yamamoto is the exception. He has. And I don't want to take a couple games in the WBC, the World Baseball Classic, as gospel that he's going to immediately come to the States and win 7 million Cy Youngs like he did in the MPB. The man won 3 straight MVPs, not just Cy Youngs or their equivalent of the Cy Young, 3 MVPs in a row, and he's 25. That's impressive enough. Moreover, when it was put up or shut up time for Team Japan, this man was a dynamo against Team USA, against every other team too, but he shut down better than any other pitcher in the tournament. And it wasn't even, honestly, the only other comp would be Shohei Ohtani. And honestly, when you look at his delivery, when you look at his pitch repertoire, when you look at what it could do, what he can do, he really does remind me of a Shohei Ohtani. I'll just go through some of his pitches, like, super quick. He has a fastball that could touch 97, a spin rate that looks right at home on Justin Verlander's Statcast page, and he has pinpoint control of it. He's got a curveball, sits at 77 miles per hour with a spin rate of 2,800. You probably don't know what that means, but it's compared on this article that's MLB.com to the curveballs of Clayton Kershaw, Max Fried, Adam Wainwright, and Yu Darvish, i.e., 4 of the best curveballs in baseball. That's not it. He also throws a crazy ass splitter that maxes out, I'm not reading this wrong, at 92 miles an hour. That is some Johan Duran level of velocity, if you ask me. It's that perfect combination of movement and speed that Shohei gets on his splitter. His pitches against what is the equivalent of big league competition, whether it's Team USA, Team Mexico, Yamamoto rose to the challenge every single time. This is the one time that I'm going to be optimistic, like fully bullish optimistic about a Japanese pitcher. I think he's going to be great. Do I think he's going to be like top pitcher in baseball type good? I don't think I'd go that far. But at least for the Dodgers, like in the stead of waiting for Shohei to come back, I think Yamamoto could serve as the team's ace. The contract is rich, but for an ace type pitcher in an ever-changing market, I think 325 will be very fair if he pans out.
Again, that's if he pans out and if he excels to that level of a Gerrit Cole, because that's the type of deal he was essentially signing, was a Gerrit Cole deal. Now, of course, Gerrit Cole's deal was only like a 9-year deal. Granted, this one's a 12-year deal. I guess there's less at stake because I guess he can hide behind the other Dodger superstars if he doesn't really do as well. So maybe the spotlight won't be on him nearly as much. So maybe that'll help him. I know I'm saying that, and it's the Los Angeles Dodgers, and they're the richest team in baseball, and possibly the biggest baseball brand around the world now, if you throw in the fact that they've got him and Shohei Ohtani now. And of course, the old adage goes here as well. A World Series ring or two will solve all of your issues. So even if they do have to eat a lot of the steel, even if Yamamoto doesn't pan out for whatever reason, if they win, that's all that's going to matter. That's really that. I mean, you're hitting the nail on the coffin. I was going to bring up the World Baseball Classic if you didn't. And he did excel there as well. So that actually gives me more confidence in his abilities and major league talent going into the season. He's got plenty of time to develop and become that ace. And he has to be that ace for the Dodgers if you're going to be paid that much. If he is not the opening day starter, actually, you know, if Clayton Kershaw is the opening day starter, I'm not going to be mad because he's Clayton Kershaw. He deserves it at this rate.
Kershaw's a free agent. And he's hurt. I forgot about that.
Oh, crap. Well, that's awkward. I guess Yamamoto's going to be the opening day starter then.
Hey, you don't know that. What if it's Emmett Sheehan, also known as the guy that gave up like 7 runs to the Diamondbacks?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It won't be Emmett Sheehan. It'll be Bobby Miller. Yeah, to save the day for the Dodgers. Whoop-dee-doo. Either way, does this solve the Dodgers' problems now with Tyler Glasnow and Yoshinobu Yamamoto? Nope. Will it solve them when they have Shohei Ohtani? It may. They still need more proven depth. I think that's really still the problem that we're seeing with the Dodgers, is they're too reliant on the luck factor, the what if, the maximum potential, but we can't know it because no one's reached that potential yet. That's what's going to hamper the Dodgers, and that's what's going to be a majority of their questions, because the offensive production, no doubt, should be a top 3 offense in Major League Baseball. If it's not a top 3 offense, or let alone a top 5 offense, that is professional malfeasance. Especially after they signed Teoscar Hernandez! I'm getting nothing from Tony. I guess he isn't the superstar they made him out to be, signing a 1-year $23.5 million deal. Yes, $23.5 million for Teoscar Hernandez and his 305 OBP from last season in Seattle and his 211 strikeouts. Yeah, it wasn't pretty. But here's the real kicker, Tony, and I don't have the exact details in front of me. I will find them. This is deferred, too! They couldn't just pay him the $23.5 million. They have the money for it. You're going to defer it over like 8 seasons starting in 2030. There's no point in doing this. And they don't even need him. What the hell? They're just doing it for fun. They're doing side quests at this rate, signing Teoscar Hernandez.
God, watch them trade for Dylan Cease next just because they can. Just because they want to, because they feel like it. Yeah, no, Teoscar Hernandez, another name to try and fill in that outfield that Cody Bellinger and other such names and Andre Ethier have left. You know, tried out David Peralta, tried out Jason Hayward last year. Hayward's actually coming back, but I imagine Teoscar is going to be more of a DH / maybe even lefty platoon specialist, but at least that's what I thought. And then I saw they're giving him $23 million. And that doesn't exactly scream lefty specialist to me, especially for a year. I don't know. That just seems, honestly, of all these contracts, this one seems like the most Brian Cashman of them all. And I mean that specifically in terms of throwing oodles of money at a name, at the idea of a Silver Slugger candidate, the idea of a 30-plus home run guy. Meanwhile, he hasn't been that guy in at least a couple years. Last time he hit 30 home runs and won a Silver Slugger was 2021 with the Toronto Blue Jays, hands down the best full season of his career. And yes, he may have that potential to get back there, but he's now 31 years old, or he's at least going to be 31 years old. His on-base skills, like you said, Tom, are putrid for a guy being paid that much. And something that I noticed last year, I saw a compilation of this on Twitter one time. He is a god-awful base runner. He is a god-awful base runner. I don't know if he led baseball in it, but he was tops towards the top in baseball at being thrown out trying to advance to second. I'm not kidding. That's actually a thing. Yeah, base running value on his 2023 Baseball Savant page, second percentile. 2. Like, what Ricky Henderson was able to do, like, make 2 bases out of 1 where someone would hit a single and he'd advance to 3rd, Teoscar Hernandez would turn 1 base into 0 more oftentimes than not. So, either they have to get him under control, or they have to, well, not either, they have to get him under control, and they need to teach him how to hit for, maybe not a better average, but at least get on base more often to justify his crazy power, because he does have power. This is not to say Teoscar Hernandez is like a bad player or not worth a contract at all. He still is a good player, just seems a little steep for a guy with seemingly atrophying abilities. I don't know, we'll see how it goes next year, but I don't exactly think it's game is gonna age well going into his 30s.
Yeah, I would try and make a comparison and say, oh, you know what, maybe he's good at Dodger Stadium. But he's only played 3 career games there, and 2 of them he started. He doesn't have a hit in any of them. He struck out 3 times in 7 at-bats. So I can't necessarily say, oh, well, he will definitely hit better in Dodger Stadium. I mean, let's be honest, he's gonna hit better in a much more ballpark-friendly or batter-friendly Dodger Stadium than out in Seattle. I mean, listen, the Mariners ballpark is essentially the gulag compared to the Dodger Stadium in terms of, like, hitting abilities for everybody, let's be real. But Teoscar Hernandez is going to be 31 this season. I don't see this making the Dodgers lineup any scarier. Actually, I have a projected lineup right in front of me for the Dodgers that Talking Baseball put out, which is Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, Will Smith, Max Muncy, Teoscar Hernandez, James Altman, Jason Hayward, and Gavin Lux. And you can also plug in Manuel Margot in there, again, as a fourth outfielder if you really want to. Teoscar Hernandez has not moved the needle any more in the positive direction for me for the Dodgers. In fact, I think it could be a negative for them just because of his high rate ability to strike out, and I feel like that could kind of ruin the Dodgers at times anyway. But I'm still more amazed at the fact that they're actually deferring this deal, Tony. I found the details of the $23.5 million in his deal. $8.5 million is going to be deferred, paid out from 2030 to 2039. Again, 2030 to 2039. Why? To defer $8.5 million. I'm sure deals like this happen all the time, but because the Dodgers are doing this now, when they've been doing this all offseason, essentially, or at least notably with Shohei Ohtani, this has to be brought up. That they can they really not afford to pay Teoscar Hernandez $23.5 million this year? I don't know. It's not a deal that moves the needle. That's really the point I'm trying to get at. I'm not trying to beat a dead horse here. And your numbers definitely would back that case up on his base running ability. I'm sure he rivals Giancarlo Stanton in the worst base runner in Major League Baseball right now. If we were to hold a contest.
Well, at least Teoscar's fast. He just doesn't use his speed well. Stanton probably couldn't outrun a tank. But just something I wanted to touch on super quick about this deferment, then we'll move on. We've talked about the Dodgers for literally an hour. This leads me to believe that the Dodgers are somehow still not done because they're deferring payment on a 1-year DH. Or I say DH, they're probably going to play him in right more often than not anyway. He does have a cannon of an arm. But nevertheless, I feel like the Dodgers are still going to pull one crazy deal out of their ass. I don't think it's going to be a trade. I feel like it'll be a lower level signing. You know, I doubt, you know, they're not going to go for a Josh Hader or a Blake Snell. They're going to get a guy where you're going to look at him and be like, oh yeah, he can help them. And they'll probably defer his f***ing payment too, because they can. Do I have a name for you right off the bat? Nope. Do I have any proof or like rumors or whispers that this is going to happen? No. I'm just inferring this based on them deferring payment for Teoscar Hernandez. But who knows? For all intents and purposes, they could be done. And they could, like, give other teams a chance to sign players here. Although, whenever they want to f***ing participate, that would be nice. I would say that about the Yankees, but as we'll get into shortly, I don't really need to say that about the Yankees. But yeah, that's the LA Dodgers. They built themselves a little team. They want to be a dynasty? Let's see if they make it past the NLDS first. Alright, Tom, let's move to a team that quickly got upstaged by the Dodgers. Like this, we mentioned it at the beginning of the segment, but the second the Yankees got Soto, the Dodgers went into maximum overdrive, to the point where I feel like a lot of people have forgotten that the Yankees casually traded every young pitcher in their system for Juan Soto. Let's rewind a little bit to fully acknowledge that. Hey, the Yankees traded for Juan Soto! Juan Woo! Soto went to the New York Yankees, baby! Oh, as it says in the rundown, have not gotten a chance to get excited about that yet. Don't tell me it's 1 year. Don't tell me he's f***ing leaving. Don't you f***ing dare tell me the Dodgers are going to sign him anyway. He's a Yankee for this year. That's all I needed in this life. Okay, maybe it's not all I needed. Maybe another starter or two. But oh my God, Juan Soto's a Yankee. For those who don't know me, Juan Soto has been my favorite hitter in baseball, or at least one of my favorite hitters in baseball, since he debuted. I have a Nationals jersey in my collection. It was one of the first jerseys I bought, and it was a Juan Soto jersey. And then weeks later, he was traded to the goddamn Padres because the baseball jersey gods hate me.
Suck it, loser.
Shut up. Who's gonna... whatever. It's still a nice jersey, so I'm... Honestly, I'm tempted to wear that to Yankee Stadium next time I go. Because I'm not buying a Soto Yankee jersey if I already got a Soto Nationals jersey. Either way, not important. What actually happened? What happened was a lot of whispering that, oh, the Yankees are close to trading for Soto. They might trade for Soto. There's talking during the winter meetings. Oh, but oh, the Dodgers have stalled out. They like went to dinner or something. This is all reported on Twitter the day of or the day before. It's like, you know, the whispers of it's probably going to happen. It almost reminded me of Aaron Judge when he was free agent. And ironically enough, Tom, Juan Soto was traded to the Yankees on the one-year anniversary of the Aaron Judge tweet. So, it was like it was destined to happen. Alright, enough bullcrap. What was the package? You want to hear about the package if you haven't heard about it already.
Yeah, tell us about Juan Soto's package. Please do.
The Yankee... God damn it. Why do you have to turn everything I say into blooper reel material? Don't we have enough from the 15 minutes we raved on for, like, God knows what, talking about Jeffrey Dahmer or whatever?
We never have enough, Tony. We can never have enough. The world can never have enough comedy.
You know what? That's kind of right. You guys saw how long the previous blooper reel was. Oh my God. Either way, like I said, they got rid of every young pitcher in their system. That is an exaggeration, but at the same time, it was a pretty hefty haul. They got rid of Michael King, Drew Thorpe, Johnny Brito, Randy Vasquez, and... painful piece to part ways with. Yankees legend and three-homer game legend, Kyle Higashioka. So, the Yankees are definitely going to have to plug some holes in their pitching staff. We talked about Michael King before. I think, Tom, in the last episode, we were mulling over what a Soto trade could look like or what the pieces could be. And I mentioned how good Michael King was towards the end of the season, so I won't go too deep into it now. If you want a deeper dive onto some of these pitchers, we did that last episode.
I think we did that last episode, but I took it out last episode because we were running like 2.5 hours on that episode, and also the Juan Soto rumors picked up, so I had to eliminate that stuff from the last episode. So okay, we did talk about it, but no one will ever hear that.
You know what? You're right. Oh, that gives me a chance to talk about Michael King's second half again. Yes.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yes.
Yeah, we're already at an hour and a half, so how about you get to it if you're going to do that?
All right, never mind. All you need to know is that in his
I want you to do it. I want you to do it. I want you to get excited about it. I even want
say
you...
Say less.
I was going to say something really bad. I'm not going to say it. I'm just... Talk about it, please.
Okay, well now you have to say it.
I want you to get aroused to it, Tony. Get yourself in the mood to talk about the second half of Michael King's second half.
I'm not disappointed that you said it, because I goaded you to say it. I'm disappointed that that's where your mind went. You just talked about Juan Soto's package, man.
Let this fill you with so much joy.
Oh my God.
Show us that joy. Bring it all out. Lift it up and show it to us.
God damn it, Tom. Why? Why do you say things you know you're going to have to bleep or take out?
I'm not bleeping any of that.
Oh, wonderful. Even better. You know what? I'm going to send this to your fucking morning show so the next poll won't be about Jeffrey Dahmer.
Oh, God. Do you want me to continue or do you want to talk about Michael King?
Oh, I'm going to talk about Michael King. I'm just here making fun of you that you're not going to escape the Jeffrey Dahmer allegations, buddy. Not after this.
Oh, God. Would you like me to play Careless Whispers? You talk about Michael King.
Oh, please do. You know what? At this point, get balls to the wall. That was the wrong turn of phrase. Okay. Let's just talk about Michael King. Michael King, his last couple starts were incredible. Immaculate, even. Let's go through the earned runs of his last seven starts of the season. These were all bare minimum four innings when he was full on a starter. 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, and then 4. What is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, his last seven starts. The four, cut him a break. He just had the best stretch of his career. A better stretch than Luis Severino had in the past two seasons. So, Padres are getting someone really, really good and established in Michael King. He's on the older side, and he is a new starter, but if he can even come close to replicating that, they got an absolute steal from the Yankees. Drew Thorpe is one of their highly touted pitching prospects. I don't know a ton about him, but people are crazy about his fastball and about his command. And then Johnny Brito, Vasquez, got reps last year. Mostly in garbage time. They didn't really have a ton of great starts to speak of. Brito, anyway. I think Vasquez had a couple decent starts under his belt. But the Padres need pitching right now. Any means necessary. It's a good deal for both sides. It'll be a better deal for the Yankees if they could sign Soto long-term after this year. Just saying, maybe a deep playoff run galvanizes him to stay in town. But nevertheless, that's the Juan Soto trade. It is oh so good to finally say it's done.
I'm very happy this deal is finally over. And that he ended up being a New York Yankee. He is literally the perfect hitter for this ballpark. The Yankees have been desperate for that left-handed bat. An effective left-handed bat. It didn't even have to be a Ted Williams-type hitter that Juan Soto is. No. We just needed an effective left-handed bat. And I'm sorry, but Aaron Hicks did not fit the bill over the past few seasons. I don't think he fulfilled that quota necessarily that the Yankees needed. In fact, they still need left-handed hitting, although we're going to get into one of their solutions in a moment. But Juan Soto is probably the perfect player that the Yankees could have acquired, minus the fact, again, that one-year deal that's really going to haunt the Yankees, and also the fact that he's represented by Scott Boras. Because if you don't know anything about Scott Boras, he is essentially the devil to Major League Baseball teams because he will extract as much money out of them as humanly possible, that he will possibly financially handicap you for years to come. And I really hope that's not the case in the case of the New York Yankees. And you could say, yes, they're the New York Yankees. They have all this money, blah, 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 blah. Hal Steinbrenner has been insisting they get under this luxury tax for so long. They finally got under the luxury tax, either that or they're hovering right around it. And of course, they have some other deals on the books already. They got the Giancarlo Stanton deal, which is really haunting them. You got Aaron Judge, who you have to pay a lot of money to. Gerrit Cole, if he's there for the remainder of his deal, is going to cost them a lot of money. And you've got other deals that are supplementary down the line that they'll either have to sign or that could haunt them and go a real long way. And I heard rumors out there that Juan Soto might not re-sign with the Yankees. One, because they might not be able to afford it. But two, they're going to be cocky enough to say, you know what, we're not going to sign a player for a longer deal than Aaron Judge got because Aaron Judge is our captain. Oh, captain, our captain. And we can't pay somebody more than Aaron Judge because of sheer dumbassery. I don't know why that's even a thing. Because the argument is completely different in the case of an Aaron Judge versus Juan Soto signing. Soto would be in his late 20s, even close to his mid-20s, actually, possibly, by the time he would sign an extension. Aaron Judge was 31 when he signed his deal. Juan Soto, no offense to Aaron Judge, has a much better slash line and arguably better numbers than Aaron Judge will have over the course of their contracts that both of them will inevitably get. Juan Soto's probably will age a hell of a lot better. Also, Juan Soto is much more durable than an Aaron Judge. Quite frankly, he's the better fit for the Yankees given their ballpark than somebody like an Aaron Judge. And I'm not trying to diss Aaron Judge. He is my captain. He is my MVP. He is one of my favorite Yankees of all time. But still, Yankees, don't be afraid to spend more than you've already shelled out for an Aaron Judge or even a Gerrit Cole, just because you've already shelled out that money for them. If it's because you can't afford another deal like that, I'd say look at yourself in the mirror and say you have billions of dollars sitting in your inventory. Use it. Find a way to get Giancarlo Stanton out of town. If you have to package a prospect just to get his contract off the books, you do that. It is imperative that you at least make a good, sincere effort for a Juan Soto next season. If it goes over $500 million, which it probably will, you might have to eat it. Guess what? That's going to be the future of signing superstars in Major League Baseball, whether you like it or not. Will he solve all their problems? No. Will he greatly contribute to their success? Yes. I don't care nearly as much about the package that gave up to San Diego. Johnny Brito, Randy Vasquez, and I love Kyle Higashioka and his contributions. They don't mean sh** to me in this deal. That's just three throw-ins because the Padres need innings eaters because they lost so much pitching. They get their pitching now. Drew Thorpe, that sucks. Here's your top pitching prospect. Fine. Michael King had 1 year, I think, left on his deal. Were the Yankees really going to re-sign him anyway? I don't know. Michael King is kind of on the verge of 30 years old, so even then you can argue, how much longer does he have? Is he going to be a viable starter for a full season? I love what Michael King did in the second half of the season, but I am fully on board with giving up all that stuff for Juan Soto.
Even, you'll never hear me say this again, but throw out statistics for a second. Imagine a Yankees starting 2025 outfield of Juan Soto in left, Aaron Judge in right, and Jason Dominguez in center. Could you f***ing imagine the tickets they would sell if that was their starting outfield? For at least, you gotta imagine the rest of the decade, you know, by the time Judge's contract is up. Soto would probably be signed till middle of the next decade, a la Shohei Ohtani. And Dominguez, you've got in-house, you don't even have to pay him extra for a little bit. So, it fits the prestige. If the Yankees want to get back to that evil empire, buy a superstar. F*** it. Who cares if people say, oh, you buy your rings, who cares? Do it, you're the Yankees. Hell, look at the Dodgers just gave you a clinic on how to fit a superstar on your roster and sign more depth as well. Will they be as savvy as the Dodgers? Probably not. Do they have the same, you know, pedigree and appeal? Probably not. But, hey, it's there. If you try and fail, that's a lot different than if you don't try. That's all I'll say. I don't have much else to add to the Soto conversation, because we still have quite a few deals to get through. We're probably just going to breeze through the rest of them. No offense, and spoiler alert, no offense to Alex Verdugo, but he's not Juan Soto.
No, not even close.
So, yeah.
In fact, I would like to make a statement here before we move on from Alex Verdugo. Can we please get rid of the Yankees beard policy just so that way Alex Verdugo can grow a beard? So that way he doesn't look like one of the babies from the first Rugrats movie, like, as they're singing their song or something that, because that's what he's being compared to.
That was so glad hilarious. You pumped that. I'm so glad you made that comp, because you put that in the chat. And I didn't open it at first, I just read, you wrote, like, oh, people are saying Verdugo looks like this kid from the Rugrats. And I'm like, I haven't watched Rugrats since I was, like five, so I'm like, what? And I opened it, it's like a perfect match. Oh my god, I'm all for tradition in baseball, especially tradition around my team. Let them grow something, more than just a Matt Carpenter, you know, Burt Reynolds porn mustache. Let them grow something, just keep it clean. Something but clean. Like, I'm thinking about this right now personally. If I, in an alternate universe where I'm the starting second baseman for the New York Yankees, if they told me I'd have to shave my beard, I'd be pissed. I'd be mad because I look 12 years old without my beard. So, that's the one thing I'm not even going to try and contest. I think it's bullshit at this point. We're in 2024. Let's just let players express themselves a little more.
They're already desecrating the Yankees jersey anyway with the stupid advertisement they're putting on it. Let's just drop the BS. Like, stop being uptight and prestige. Let people grow their beards. At least let Alex Verdugo grow his beard, because, dude, I am so sorry. I am not one to talk about looks, obviously, for what's gone on in this episode alone. I am so sorry. He is not an attractive look. That's all I'm saying. Tell me I'm wrong. Please tell me I'm wrong. Anybody out there. It is not a good look. I am sorry. With that being said, is this a good fit for the New York Yankees? Looks? No. Grow the porn stash. Production-wise, he's a good outfielder. He'll play one of the corners. He's a consistent, like, 280, 330 kind of batting average to OBP type of guy. The issue with him is hustle. And if you thought the Boston media in Boston were eating him up and hating him because of his lack of hustle, from what I hear, just wait till you get to New York, buddy. You might want to start putting in some extra reps and start, like, hustling a little bit more. Like, maybe it's a lack of wanting to win. I don't know what the real case is with Alex Verdugo. That's just what I've heard from rumblings in Boston, and trust me, that's not going to fly in New York. You will become the next Aaron Hicks immediately if you show a lack of effort with the New York Yankees. You will be booed out of town so fast, Alex Verdugo. Just put in that effort. Otherwise, he fits into the lineup. Lefty hitter, he's not going to necessarily provide you with the pop, but he'll give you some contact, and I have no problem with that.
That's all he is. He's a decent average guy who's meant to be a plug until Dominguez gets healthy. He's a free agent in 2025, so we'll have him for this season, and then at that rate, they'll have the decision if they don't bring him back. I don't think anyone in the organization would lose sleep, especially if you're trying to bring back Soto. And for what it is, it's fine. The package they gave up isn't exactly, you know, earth-shattering. They gave up Greg Weissert, who I did like, Greg Weissert, Weiss dog. Nicholas Judas, who I frankly never heard of. And a right-handed pitcher named Dick Fitz. Richard Fitz, to be exact, but everyone was calling him Dick Fitz online. I had to.
I didn't even think of that. Oh my god.
Just pair that with the conversation we had earlier in the blooper reel. Dude, I'm doing you a favor.
You're doing great for that contribution, and I thank you so much for that. Let's move on, please, so that way we don't have to keep talking about a Dick Fitz. Unless you wanted to talk about Verdugo a little bit more and his fit with the New York Yankees. No. I kind of stole your thunder there for a second.
Let's just keep going and talk about a team that isn't the Yankees or the Dodgers, because we have a couple more trades than a few little signings, and then we're going to shut this one out. All right, y'all ready? Let's start the lightning round. We have Jung-Hoo Lee signing with the Giants for 6 years, $113 million. They finally got a guy to sign with them. Only took them like 8 tries, but yeah, Jung-Hoo Lee, we talked about him in the last episode, Korean sensation from the World Baseball Classic, great lefty bat, toolsy guy, outfielder. I expressed my hesitancy with guys like him earlier when I mentioned Shogo Akiyama, but I'm going to use the same argument I did with Yoshinobu Namamoto. I always say Namamoto. I don't know why. Yoshinobu Yamamoto. I'm going to give him more credit because he produced well in the WBC against really good pitching too. So he's going to the Giants for 6 years, $113 million. It's a bit hefty, but for what the Giants need, and that's identity and outfield help, I don't think it's that bad.
Looks fine to me. I mean, the only concern I really have is his pop going to translate over to Major League Baseball? Is he going to be able to maintain that over 300 batting average in Major League Baseball? We can clearly see he's able to get on base. He keeps his strikeouts very low. Will he translate to Major League pitching? That's just going to be the full-time discussion that we'll have to have when it comes to San Francisco Giants. But hey, they got their star that they've been wanting. Yay! Round of applause. I don't know if I necessarily call Jung-Hoo Lee a star, but he's got the prospect to be one. I mean, there's not much else going on in San Francisco these days other than Logan Webb. So I guess it's another jersey they can sell. Congratulations on your 78 wins, San Francisco.
That may be being nice, but I will say, Tom, that's not the only thing going on in San Francisco.
Oh, really?
They've become the latest benefactors of Jerry DePoto's death spiral. I dubbed that after the seasons preceding Jerry DePoto's inevitable firing, because at this point, what the f*** is he doing? Like, we've been asking this question for a couple trades now, but this one, he gave the Giants Robbie Ray, their bona fide ace when he's healthy, sans maybe Logan Gilbert, for Mitch Haniger and Anthony DeSclafani. Explain this to me. Like, I get it. The Mariners have a really good pitching staff, and they proved they could be a good pitching staff this year without Robbie Ray. Okay, totally fine. You seriously couldn't get a little more out of the Giants for that. Like, Robbie Ray's a great pitcher. When he's healthy, he could be one of the best in baseball. Strikeout machine, control freak, bitten by the long ball occasionally, but hey, that's a lefty Gerrit Cole at best. Not quite the same level, but a tier below. You're telling me the best you can get for that is injury-riddled Mitch Haniger, who's been with the Mariners before, and Anthony DeSclafani, who cratered harder than the f***ing asteroids from the moon? That's not how that works, but I needed an analogy quick. Cratered harder than anything I've ever seen last year after starting out well. DePoto, I guess, is fulfilling the Mariners' need for hitting. Unless Mitch Haniger could go back to his 100 RBI self from 2021, I don't see this going well at all. This seems like a terrible trade, at least for the Mariners.
I don't understand it either, especially Mitch Haniger's production last year. He had 209 last year in 61 games, an OBP of 266. I mean, dude is rivaling, he literally went from being a pretty good hitter in Seattle to a Jason Bay type of hitter out in San Francisco for 1 year. I mean, that's not good. Jason Bay, Mets Jason Bay we're talking about. So really not good. This just screams to me like they were going to make a bigger move and make a splash in free agency, but they've yet to do that. This is the Mariners we're talking about. All they talk about is winning 54% of their games. And I don't know if this is really going to help them, because they're not adding anything that significant. DeSclafani can be a good supplementary 4-5 guy, but they really don't need the pitching. I mean, maybe that's why they thought, yeah, Robbie Ray, they don't necessarily need anymore. But all this says to me is he's just a cap casualty. And I don't get that, because they're not paying anyone really anything. No one's up for an extension right away, I don't think. You're going to have to pay guys in the future. But even then, I have my doubts. Because it's Seattle we're talking about. For the Giants, good acquisition. Great. Hopefully he'll work out in the NL West. He was there previously. He was there with Arizona. He's got the experience out there. It wasn't necessarily the greatest experience because he had some very, very bad lows out in Arizona. But still, I just really don't. I don't understand Jerry DePoto's thinking of constantly needing to make changes. Like, I don't know why he's so OCD about his roster. Why he needs to keep thinking he's cleaning it up. You could have found outfield depth somewhere else in free agency if you really wanted to. Take a flyer on somebody. Don't trade away Robbie Ray for f***ing Mitch Haniger again. I mean, if you really wanted him, you could have waited another season, and then you could have gotten Mitch Haniger for even cheaper than now. But don't worry. Seattle redeemed themselves, because they made another trade pretty much the same day, I'm pretty sure, too. They traded away Jose Caballero for Luke Raley with the Tampa Bay Rays. The offense will never be bustling as much as it is now with Luke Raley on the team.
So let's take stock right now, Tom. Jerry DePoto has nixed the team's starting third baseman, ace pitcher, debatably, you know, two pitcher behind Luis Castillo, and has left Julio Rodriguez to die out in the outfield. He's Ichiro Suzuki-ing him right in front of his eye, right in front of our eyes. A good pitching staff does not win you championships alone, Jerry. It might win you 54 games, but here's the surprise, 54% of your games does not take you to the playoffs. That's not how that works, not in the AL West at least, because spoiler alert, one of your division rivals just won the World Series, and another one did it last year. Granted, one of them's the Oakland A's, and the other's the Los Angeles Angels, but guess where that leaves you? Sandwiched in the f***ing middle, no man's land, where you've been basically since the 21st century started. After 2001, this team really is depressing, man. I wanted to have faith in them. Like when Julio got called up and Jared Kelnick started hitting like crazy and they traded for Eugenio Suarez. I thought that was a great trade. And George Kirby, Long Island legend George Kirby, actually turned out to be a Cy Young favorite this year. My dark horse this year. It really is a fool's errand, a fool's effort to be a fan of the Mariners, because they're just going to keep kicking you and kicking you while you're down. You know, it's a little more to my... I don't want to say more tempestuous, but at least equally tempestuous right now, Tom.
Talk to me.
Being a Red Sox fan, they've had a bit of interesting couple of weeks. Now, granted, I'm not expressing any sense of sympathy because, one, I'm a Yankees fan. Two, if I hear more recent success from another Red Sox fan, I'm going to blow my brains out. But this offseason's been interesting to the Red Sox. They rattled off two trades recently, and I'm going to go through them both right now. Number one, they traded away Chris Sale. They also gave the Braves cash to help pay for his contract in exchange for Vaughn Grissom and his Albatross contract. So maybe he'll be the long-term answer for the Red Sox at shortstop? Maybe not. The Adalberto Mondesi experiment didn't work well, as everyone on Earth predicted. So maybe this'll turn it around. And for the Braves, I mean, hey, if you can get the man to stop getting injured, he'll at least give you a butt ton of strikeouts and some damn good performances. Just be sure to limit the inning count, you know, put him behind Charlie Morton in the rotation and then curb his innings a little bit if you need to. That's deal one. Deal two, I honestly think is a pretty good deal for them, a nice little buy low. They got Tyler O'Neill from the St. Louis Cardinals in exchange for right-handed pitchers Victor Santos and Nick Robertson, basically excess goods. Their bullpen was pretty solid last year, and they need some more pop. And guess what? Surprise. There's a surprise third trade they got in there. Oh boy, ladies and gentlemen, let's open the mystery box. Let's see what they got. to the Boston Red Sox went Lucas Giolito and what I only imagine is oodles of buyer's remorse. And to Lucas Giolito goes, I'm not reading this wrong, $38.5 million over the next 2 seasons with a player opt-out in between. Huh? Like, mind you, let's get on the same page, ladies and gentlemen. This is the same Lucas Giolito who, over the course of 2023, pooped out an ERA plus of 118 with the Chicago White Sox. Okay, pretty decent, pretty respectable. Then he goes to the Angels and poops out a 65 ERA plus. And then he goes to the Guardians and it gets worse. A 60 ERA plus. This is a man who's been on a constant downward spiral ever since the pandemic season. Conveniently, ever since the sticky stuff ban and crackdown started happening. And the Red Sox gave him damn near $40 million. Like, Red Sox, when we said fix your rotation, we meant plug it with pieces that'll help you, not hinder you further. I'm sorry, this might be the most ludicrous signing of the whole offseason for me, Tom. This just screams desperate. They were desperate for anybody, and they didn't feel like paying for Blake Snell. So they figured, huh, maybe he'll magically go back to 2020 form.
Listen, I once predicted Lucas Giolito to win the American League Cy Young out of sheer stupidity. I think the Boston Red Sox are taking a page from 2022 Tom Bauer and thinking he can return to that form out of sheer stupidity. Look, the Boston Red Sox are a big market team. I think that's fairly obvious. A rich history, one of the greatest sports monuments of all time in Fenway Park. They've got I'm not going to say a good brand because it's the Red Sox and I'm a Yankee fan, but they've got a lot going for them. They've got a lot of history and they've got rich owners. The problem is they don't ever spend. Like, they're a big market team now. For whatever reason, Chaim Bloom is gone, guys! You can spend! And they choose to do it on Lucas Giolito? Used goods! Discount aisle! I can't even say discount aisle! He's like the thing you get at Dollar Tree for 20 bucks! He's like buying a video game at Dollar Tree! That's what Lucas Giolito is! A washed-up video game from 5 years ago with a Metacritic score of 51! That's what Lucas Giolito is to the Boston Red Sox. Oh, I know they needed pitching help in their rotation, but they're really not doing themselves any favors when dumping Chris Sale and acquiring Lucas Giolito. I'm sorry. That's not going to do anything. Maybe it saves them money in the long term. I'd have to look at the Sale deal compared to Lucas Giolito. But dear God in heaven, this can only go bad. I'm not predicting anything good for Lucas Giolito and the Red Sox. I'm sorry, I can't do that. It's not going to be... It's not a pitcher-friendly situation what he's going into. I feel like free agents in Boston are usually hit or miss. This is definitely going to be a miss. Luckily for them, it's only a 2-year deal, and the player can opt out of it after a year, I'm assuming. So thank for that. But then again, if I'm Lucas Giolito, I'm not opting out because I'm going to swindle the Red Sox of all this money because I know I'm not going to get that in free agency next year if I continue to pitch like I have. I'm banking on prior potential to guide me to more money in the future. God bless Lucas Giolito, not the Boston Red Sox. As far as Tyler O'Neill goes, he hasn't proven anything since his 2021 miracle season. He's got pop, he can still play defense, but he needs to fix his hitting. As for Chris Sale and Vaughn Grissom, I think it's just two commodities that each of them kind of treasured, kind of loathed for their own reasons, and they're all getting fresh starts. So Chris Sale will get a fresh start in Atlanta's rotation, which will be a good acquisition for them. If he doesn't crack into a million pieces of glass, kind of like how Tyler Glass now will, then it'll work out A-okay for Atlanta. I do have question marks that they have him and Charlie Morton in a rotation. For durability's sake, that's a big question mark. And even Max Fried, if you're going to... Actually, you know what? Anybody in that rotation outside Spencer Strider scares me kind of with their injury histories. As for Vaughn Grissom, new start. Got that. He already has his money. And he'll look to be an infield depth for the Boston Red Sox. They got infielders on the way, so he's really got to prove his worth if he wants to stay in the big leagues for that much longer. So that's everything that's happened in Boston. Tony, do you want to elaborate more on Lucas Giolito and the buyer's remorse, or do you just want to get on to the rest of the deals we got here?
If I talk more about Lucas Giolito, my brain is probably just going to devolve into making fun of you for picking him as a Cy Young, which, as fun as that is, I've done that before. Let's talk about stuff we haven't yet, and that's the remainder of these deals. So, I'm going to bunch these next three deals together because I consider them to be the last big, I don't want to say significant deals, but the last deals that with big money involved. Tom name-dropped one of them earlier. Eduardo Rodriguez goes to the Arizona Diamondbacks for 4 years at $80 million. Honestly, not a bad price tag. Jameer Candelario is going to give the Reds some infield veteran presence, honestly very needed given how young that infield is. He'll be there for 3 years at a $45 million price tag. And then my favorite, the Reds weren't done yet. I mentioned it at the beginning of the episode too, it's the biggest move for a reason. Frankie Montas to the Cincinnati Reds for 1 year, $16 million, with a mutual $20 million offer, or option, sorry, for next season. So that rotation, that's already kind of a walking gas can, giving up home runs like there's no tomorrow. Yeah, it's like dousing a campfire with lithium. That's at least what's going to happen when you add Frankie Montas to it. Now, to be fair, I'll defend Frankie Montas one little bit here, Tom, and then I'm going to throw it to you. You can talk about whichever one of these deals you like. I'm just choosing to start with Frankie Montas. If he gets back to form. If he does, he could be amazing for the Reds. He's still going to give up quite a bit of runs. He was never quite like a 2 ERA type guy. He was always like low threes at best. The guy could be a strikeout machine. He showed that in Oakland. Hell, the year the Yankees traded for him, the season he had in Oakland was pretty damn good. I'm going to pull up the numbers right now super quick since I'm still on Baseball Reference. Even if he's not amazing, if he just, you know, compiles strikeouts while guys like Hunter Green and Andrew Abbott kind of lead the charge as the young guys trying to right the ship of the wrongs they turned down last year. Like, see here, his last half season in Oakland, 116 ERA plus, not the greatest on earth, but still a 318 ERA with 119 strikeouts. That's respectable. That's honestly pretty good. If the Reds get that out of him, I'm not upset. However, if I get the 39 innings he threw for the Yankees to a 6.35 ERA, I'm shitting my pants. So, Frankie Montas is the ultimate boomer bust candidate on this slate we've got here. I'm honestly leaning a little more towards boom because I know how this works. This is going to be Sonny Gray all over again. The Yankees fucking trade for a pitcher from the A's. He goes to the Reds and completely reforms himself. I don't think he'll be amazing, but I don't think he'll be good enough. Tom, please take the reins. Talk about any of these deals you'd like.
I'll save my good old buddy Frankie Montas for last. I'll start from the top. Eduardo Rodriguez. Detroit, I'm sorry you lost your ace. That sucks to be you. You were never going to get him in free agency to begin with, and you failed him so much, or maybe he's failed the team so much, because I'm pretty sure he went AWOL from them for a while. But regardless of who failed who, and yeah, Eduardo Rodriguez has a new home in the desert. 4 years, $80 million, $20 million for a pitcher like him per year. Sure'd work out well. Cautionary tale, though. The last time they signed a big-named lefty in free agency was Madison Bumgarner. Does anybody want to take a guess at how that deal went down for them? Now, am I going to say Eduardo Rodriguez is going to turn out like Madison Bumgarner? Hell no. There are many more red flags in Madison Bumgarner's repertoire and his resume and everything at that point than there was for than there is going to be for Eduardo Rodriguez. Plus, he's in Arizona. It's not like there's a lot of pressure there to begin with anyway. If he pitches like he did, like that all-star form this year, great. If he kind of pitches like hovering around the 4 ERA, meh. I guess they could still do worse. As far as Jaime Candelario goes for the Reds, they needed a third baseman because last year their third baseman was Nick Senzel, and now he is a member of the Washington Nationals, whether or not you remember that or not. You can argue whether or not they needed him because they have a lot of infield depth to begin with. However, this is, again, veteran leadership, so fair enough. Now, again, another cautionary tale. If the Reds think, oh, Jaime Candelario is so great on the Chicago Cubs, surely that'll translate to the rest of the NL Central and us. Jaime Candelario had one good week with the Chicago Cubs once he got there. He turned into Jesus Christ himself, and then he tapered off and finished with a 234, 318 clip and a 103 OPS plus over the course of 41 games. So not necessarily great. Plus, he's 30 years old. Jaime Candelario kind of sees what you get. You're going to get a guy who can maybe produce 2.5 WAR for you over the course of each year of this contract. Hopefully he doesn't turn out to be like another Mike Moustakas for them. I really caution at the infielders they've signed in the past, especially for a deal like this. It hasn't worked out for them necessarily. So, yeah, I'm going to kind of be a little bit cautionary on this one, but it really won't hurt you too much. Frankie Montas. Good riddance. Bye-bye. Goodbye. Goodbye. Ah, feels so good. They're paying him $16 million to resurrect the once remaining goods of Sonny Gray coming from the New York Yankees. They're literally banking on that success again because guess what? They're on the exact same arc minus the injury. Piss poor play, piss poor pitching in the city of New York for the Yankees. Once in Oakland, Sonny Gray was much better in Oakland than Frankie Montas ever was. I don't think anybody will really dispute that. And now he goes to Cincinnati once again. I'm okay with this. I don't care. He never worked out for the Yankees. He cost them a pretty penny, an arm and a leg. But honestly, I don't know how much the prospects would have translated anyway. Ugh, $16 million. That's still a lot of money for Frankie Montas. I get he's got a lot of potential to be had. He's still relatively young for a pitcher. But I balk at this one, but that's just because I have a pure disdain and hatred towards Frankie Montas. But that being said, I'm just happy he's off the Yankees. I don't care. Good riddance. Adios. Let's move on.
You're going to parlay that? Yeah, we'll move on in a second, but you're going to parlay, I hate Frankie Montas. That is why I despise this deal. Anyway, I don't care. He's off the Yankees. Bye. Like, you can't play the nonchalant and the I hate him card at the same time. What are you, a Red Sox fan?
Yeah, okay. I'd say try me, bitch, but I already tried you with that. I already just did that, so.
Try it. I can hit you with the Jeffrey Dahmer comeback or the Lucas Giolito comeback.
How about you just hit me with the rest of the news that we have to go through?
Fair enough. Fair enough. I'll save that for the end of the episode. Anyway, actually, I'm going to ask you to get a drop for me super quick for this next one.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, yeah. Yeah, hang on. I see what you're saying. Do you just want me to play it?
Yeah, just do it right now. Go ahead.
Forza Italia! Woo!
Congratulations, Atlanta Braves. You have gotten yourself a Puglisi's Paisan. They have traded for Forza Italia legend David Fletcher and throw-in catcher Max Stassi in exchange for Evan White, who they got in the Jared Kelnick deal, and right-handed pitcher Tyler Thomas. They send them back to Los Angeles to watch their careers die in Anaheim. Gentlemen, I'm sorry. Obviously, this is a good deal for the Braves. David Fletcher's a decent depth piece, and Max Stassi is catcher depth when Travis d'Arnaud eventually walks or retires. Let's keep going. The Braves also flipped Marco Gonzalez, again, acquired in the Jared Kelnick trade, to the Pirates for cash. God damn, Marco Gonzalez has had quite a downturn in his career, and that's kind of sad to watch, but hey, the Braves got what they could out of him. The Royals are kind of a surprise team, Tom. They've been making some low-key good moves to bolster their pitching. They've handed out short-term deals to Seth Lugo, Chris Stratton, and noted World Series winner, kind of the Pat Maroon of baseball, if you know hockey, Will Smith. Talked about him before, won the World Series with the Braves in 21, the Astros in 22, and now the Rangers in 23. So congrats, Royals. You've officially kind of sort of de facto won the 2024 World Series. Hooray! Golf clap. You can't hear it, but golf clap. Oh my god, but good on the Royals, trying to pretend to be competitive for Vinny Pasquantino. I can appreciate that. The Angels are doing their best to masquerade as a team that exists. They signed Luis Garcia and Adam Simber to one-year deals. That's what competitive teams do, right? But now, the best moves, the most important moves. I was lying before when I said it was Frankie Montas. These are the moves you want to remember. Because folks, the Colorado Rockies are cooking right now. They are cooking something fierce. And it involves future World Series champions Dakota Hudson and Jacob Stallings. Come on down! And promptly watch your career spiral out in a f***ing death spin on a team that doesn't know what they're doing. Hope you have fun for the 1 year that you're there. Oh my god, that's it. I didn't even bother including the money on these deals. It's a couple 1 year deals for some failed pieces elsewhere in the National League. That's it. That's all I've got to say about them. And that's actually the last of the moves that we have for this here episode.
What a great series of moves to go out on. The guy who might resurrect his offensive career that he never had in Colorado, and the guy whose pitching career is literally going to go down the hole in Dakota Hudson. Oh, boy. The good news for him is he can just migrate north a few states, and then he can call home once he inevitably has to be forced to retire because he pitched so bad for the Colorado Rockies. Because get it, Dakota is going to go to one of the Dakotas. Okay, that was terrible.
That took me a second to get.
Yeah, that was terrible. I'm sorry. We do have a couple more things that we want to go through really, really quickly. The MLB draft order has been announced, and surprise, surprise, the Oakland A's and the Kansas City Royals couldn't even whisker their way into the 1 and 2 picks. They got stuck with 4 and 6. You suck so bad. You don't even get the top 3 pick. They're going to botch it anyway, I guarantee. But they suck at a whole different level. At least the Rockies got third. The Guardians got the number 1 overall pick. What the f*** do they do to deserve that? We're from like 9th to 1st. Even the Reds are 2nd, and they had a good year.
They had 80 wins. The Reds were 2 games under 500, and they got the 2nd overall pick. Mother of God.
Sweet, sweet retribution. Rockies 3, A's 4, White Sox 5, Royals 6. That's your lottery right there. Oh my God, that is so satisfying. Oh, thank God MLB made this new rule about the MLB draft. Kind of. You still get a guaranteed spot if you suck so bad, but you're not guaranteed the number 1 pick. I love the draft lottery just for the sheer stupidity of this alone, and also the sheer retribution of F*** you, Oakland. You get the 4th overall pick now. Suffer. Not so much to the Royals, but they suck just as bad, and they get 6, so that's pretty splendid, too.
I was going to say, man, they were only like a handful of losses off from basically copying the A's record. And the fact that they're drafting 6th is f***ing hilarious to me. They are drafting below a division rival that had a better season than they did. Granted, not a much better season. I'm pretty sure the White Sox lost 100 games. This to me is hysterical. This will never cease to be funny. Hell, Tom, I'll get to the next thing in a second, but there was like a 0.2% chance that the Yankees would have gotten the top overall pick because they didn't make the playoffs. That if that had happened, oh my God, I would have been like, you know that Tangled meme where it's that guy, like the main character guy standing there all smug and there's a million swords pointed at him?
Tangled meme? My man, you played him for Halloween. You should know this.
I know this. I'm asking if you know that. You think I don't know Flynn Rider?
Thank you. I was about to say, you God made it sound like you were really confused over that first second.
It was just, I don't know if I just say, oh, Flynn Rider. Folks don't know who that is. You've got folks watching this podcast that don't like Disney. Who knows?
Yeah, they sure do watch this podcast. Clearly a visual medium.
God damn it. It's late. Sue me. Either way, that meme of him just standing there all smug while the swords are pointed at him, that would have been me. If the Yankees got the top pick, all smug while everyone else is pissed off, that would have been great. But hey, Guardians fans could be like that. I'm pretty sure this is only the 2nd time they've ever drafted 1st overall, if not the 1st. So congrats to them. Hopefully they get a guy who can actually fix that hitting core in a couple years. But still, speaking of the Cleveland Guardians, or I suppose back then the Indians, one of their better players from the 2010s has decided to call it a career, and that man is Michael Brantley. Brantley has spent the past couple seasons with the Houston Astros, as you all most likely know. Signed there in free agency and won a World Series with them in 2022. But definitely, at least for folks who grew up around the same age Tom and I did, more likely than not are going to know him for his time with the Indians. That one time he randomly finished top 3 in MVP voting behind Mike Trout. That time where he led the league in doubles, again, all within a couple of years span. Went to the World Series with them in 2016. Didn't do a ton for them because I believe he was hurt. But yeah, one of the best lefty contact bats of our generation, consistently a great hitter, a great guy on and off the field, consistently putting up great numbers even into his mid-30s. That's how tenacious a guy he is. That's how great of a player he is. Every player, every like manager, guy he's ever played with who has asked something about him has said nothing but great things. And he wants to retire because, simply put, to quote the man himself, it's time for him to spend more time at home, watch his kids grow up and hit the important milestones, not miss anything. So, with a mindset like that, you can only respect the man. Don't have much else to say about that. All the best to Michael Brantley and the rest of his life, whatever he decides to do with it. Congrats on a great career.
Yeah, if we weren't almost 2.5 hours into a episode right now, I'd give more flying colors to him. But, I mean, just the definition of a pure hitter. 298 career batting average, 355 career OBP, 117 OPS plus isn't anything to scoff at, but he was never really known for his power to begin with. I mean, I feel like he's just that typical, like, 90s hitter that was always underrated. I don't know why. I'm thinking that's, like, the prototype of a Michael Brantley right now, but I just feel like he kind of was that, a light five-tool player at one point in his career. Congratulations, Michael Brantley. Moving on, we've got Yadier Molina being hired as a special assistant to the president of baseball operations in St. Louis. Thank God. Somebody with a real knack for leadership is finally in St. Louis, and unfortunately, Ollie Marmol is still there, but that's, I don't know, maybe Yadier Molina will one day be the manager of the St. Louis Cardinals for all we know. And also, hey, Chaim Bloom was brought on as an advisor to the president. How about that? He got another job. And it was in a small market, like we said. So, score one for the Diamond Duo boys for saying that he would get a job in a smaller market. Ooh. Actually, that may have been more Tony, but I'm saying it was the show. Because that makes me look better by default. And Tony, I'm just going to breeze to the next and final story because I don't think we're really going to be able to pay that much lip service to the St. Louis Cardinals in this episode. Max Scherzer undergoes Max Scherzer undergoes surgery for a herniated disc in his back. He's going to be out until the middle of the season. Big L for the Texas Rangers. And around the same time, Tyler Molly and Jacob DeGrom are also expected to be back. So the Texas Rangers 2024 playoff run, if it already wasn't started, because they're going to have to defend their title, well, guess what? It's just going to pick up steam in the middle of the season. That's all the news we got, folks. That's everything from the past, like, 3 weeks that we've missed.
Bit of a mouthful, as we kind of expected, from Juan Soto to Max Scherzer needing surgery, as Tom so eloquently put it. But we hope this was a good one for you folks. We're going to try and get this next episode out to you, like we said, within the coming days after this episode comes out. So, hypothetically, let's say this comes out on Wednesday or Thursday. Expect this one out sometime between, you know.
More likely Thursday.
Fully putting that out there. It's late. We may not record again tonight. But no, if it comes out Thursday, expect the next episode. If not this weekend, you know, next Monday. Something like that. When we would normally record is when the episode would come out. So, and that's going to be the New Year's resolution one, folks. That one is going to be us trying to predict good things that should happen to teams, but probably won't. So, thanks for sticking with us. Hoping for a great 2024 with you guys. It was a great 2023 beforehand. Here's to a fun year, folks. Just baseball content creation. I think it's going to be really good.
I certainly hope so, Tony. I will echo the same opinion. I can't wait until the next episode when we also not only look forward, but look back on our previous failures and mistakes of trying to predict the 2023 season.
I forgot about that.
Oh, boy.
That ought to be good.
Yeah, that's going to be great. We'll have some audio to go with it, folks. You'll get to hear us in a previous life ramble on about some things that we got right and some things we got previous year. Whatever. Who cares?
Listen to our ancestors. It was pretty much a
previous life, dude. Years go by very long. We're getting... I don't know. I'm running out of words. I'm just throwing words out at you at this rate. Tom is having a stroke. Yeah, I'm effectively ending the episode immediately because otherwise I'm going to keep rambling on and this episode's already going to reach 2.5 hours.
Take it away, Tomer.
I'm glad I let you interject there so that way you could say that. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode of the Diamond Duo Podcast, episode 82. Be sure to give us a like and a subscription on wherever you get your podcasts, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you are. Be sure to follow us there. Also follow us on Instagram at the Diamond Duo Podcast, on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, at Diamond Duo Pod. For the Paizan himself, Tony Puglisi, I am Tom Dahmer. I couldn't help myself. I am Tom Bauer. yeah. Signing off for now. Hopefully next time I won't be called a serial killer. Adios. Take care.
Don't hold your breath.